Hello, and welcome to our podcast. The title of today's podcast is Minority Syndrome, Disparities of Diagnosis and Drug Use with Ethnically Diverse Patients and the Lack of Minority Representation in the Mental Health System. This podcast will discuss three main points: differences in drug use as well as drug alignment with different racial and social classes. The second point being differential outcomes for treatments of disorders such as PTSD, autism, and schizophrenia for different races. And our third and final point will be an investigation into the lack of minority representation into the practitioner population. My name is Angela Winings, and I am joined by my two fellow classmates, Rakeem Griffin and Max Gare, and we will all be presenting on this topic, each one of us taking one of the main points.
The most recent generations of Americans have grown up in an era of mass incarceration. More than 2 million Americans are currently cycling through the United States prison system, and this number has been steadily growing since the 1980s. The reason for this has been known for decades, however, its racial intent is often denied by mass media. During his presidential term, Ronald Reagan catalyzed an ongoing campaign that millions of Americans have labeled the War on Drugs. This war on drugs was a public campaign to control the use and distribution of narcotics across the United States, with Reagan at the helm of policy and law and his wife Nancy Reagan headlining the public awareness campaign Just Say No. In 1984, Reagan's first big bill to combat drug use became law. This bill was called the Comprehensive Crime and Control Act, and it changed prisons forever. The Comprehensive Crime and Control Act was not in its entirety concerned about narcotic use. However, its subsection, titled the Sentencing Reform Act, instituted a mandatory minimum to prison sentencing for drug possession and distribution. Through the mandatory minimum law, courts are required to issue a standard minimum prison sentence relative to the amount of illegal product that was seized upon arrest, and more importantly, the type of product that was seized. One of the most notable reforms in Reagan's Act was the sentencing disparity between arrests for possession of crack cocaine and powder cocaine. To receive a 5-year minimum sentence for powder cocaine possession, you had to have been carrying over 500 grams, but for crack cocaine, you only needed 5. Crack cocaine is chemically identical to powder cocaine, with the only difference being how you take it. And despite the epidemic of crack cocaine being near equal among poor white and African American people, incarceration of African-American populations skyrocketed, rising from 200 African-American people per million in 1981 to over 2,000 people per million today. Over 80% of federal prisons consist of incarcerated Black and Latino people. Despite white people and Black people using the drug equally today, statistics are ignored and crack cocaine is still discussed as a Black problem. Law enforcement today raids and surveils Black neighborhoods while white bankers and businessmen use powder cocaine with impunity. This is the largest problem of racial care disparity in the United States, but there are many more. A study from 2008 titled Race and Ethnicity and Gender Differences in Drug Use and Abuse Among College Students, which used an online questionnaire to collect data, found that white and Hispanic women and men in college were more than twice as likely to use and abuse drugs than Black men and women in college using the DAST, or Drug Abuse Screening Test, 10. Despite this, Black populations are being stopped, searched, and arrested 5 times more frequently than white populations. Another study from 1999 found that 20-29% of Black and Hispanic persons required assistance from welfare services, such as Medicaid, in order to obtain prescription drugs and personalized treatments, compared to 5% of the white population.
This section will begin by examining differences in diagnosis, treatment, and treatment availability for members of ethnically diverse groups. As an overview, it is clear that differential outcomes on treatments for schizophrenia and autism for members of other racial groups highlight a systematic flaw within the social dynamics of the mental health system. The origins of issues relating to racial inequalities for these disorders start with diagnostic criteria that lack culturally shaped inferences. As a result, misdiagnosis is an issue for members of other races, with autism being underdiagnosed in Hispanic communities and Blacks disproportionately being identified with schizophrenia or psychotic disorders rather than trauma-related disorders. These culturally shaped inferences could include language or even just an understanding of how culture may ultimately shape experience. Whether it be issues with language or misunderstanding of cultural history and its impact on perspective, it's clear that race is influencing these differences in mental health. So we've looked at psychotic disorders or mood disorders and how there's some disparities that exist, especially when it comes to diagnosing schizophrenia and members of the Black community, and how oftentimes this diagnosis of schizophrenia is really a trauma-related disorder or PTSD. So let's go outside the realm of mood disorders for a second and see if these disparities still exist when it comes to diagnosing other types of disorders. Specifically, we're going to look at intellectual disorders or autism. When looking at autism, it is very clear that there's differences in diagnosis between Hispanics, Blacks, and Whites, with members of the Hispanic and Black community being diagnosed significantly lower with rates of autism when compared to Whites. So many think, oh, well, members of these groups just don't experience these issues at as high of a level. But the science says differently. The science says that these percentages should be a little higher in these groups. Therefore, there's been some question behind whether or not members of the Hispanic and Black community, one, have access to people that can provide diagnoses, as well as two, when undergoing the screening, whether or not the diagnoses actually can catch autism within these Hispanic and Black individuals. So, just like the 2007 article, there's a 2009 article called Racial and Ethnic Disparities in the Identification of Children with Autism Spectrum Disorders. This lays out a little bit of the ideas that we've been talking about before about system and client level issues that may end up causing this issue, but it also lays out the pattern or what these issues in misdiagnosing could lead to. To begin with, the article begins by stating that there is a clear difference between ethnic and racial groups in the diagnosis and treatment of many health conditions, but autism highlights one of the main issues and areas of disparity. It is oftentimes seen with an issue such as autism that communication between patient and practitioner proves crucial when it comes to the screening and referral process. For members of Hispanic and or Black communities, communicating with a practitioner may not always be easy, and sometimes the mistrust between a patient and practitioner can be interpreted as other disorders rather than autism or a social issue. But the reality is, this is not the only thing causing these disparities. When it comes to young children in the Hispanic community, language can becoming a barrier. Something that's mentioned within this article is how parents, when asked why they didn't bring their kids in sooner for this autism diagnosis or why they waited so long to bring their kid in, was a lack of communication or a lack of understanding of where to receive treatment. With this in mind, it becomes clear that when it comes to a practitioner looking at a patient, there's much more that needs to be taken into account when looking at the child's social ability and other factors that may influence an autism diagnosis. But it doesn't end here. Sadly, diagnosis is not the only problem when it comes to looking at the relationship between race and autism spectrum disorder, but it's also treatment as well. Finding a treatment that is appropriate for a child that already struggles with speaking English, for example, and a Hispanic child diagnosed with autism, is extremely difficult when it comes to helping this child with social interaction that may enable better management of symptoms relating to autism. And it's beyond that. A lot of children in these Latino families also had fewer current therapy hours and more unmet therapy needs than children in white families. Additionally, parents in these Hispanic as well as Black communities oftentimes face socioeconomic hardships that do not allow them to put their child in a constant therapy setting or give the child the therapy that they need or put them in a school that will tend to the child's needs. Oftentimes, these children are left to fend for themselves or work on these issues at home or take the small time of treatment and apply that in a daily way, and thus putting a lot more responsibility on the patient. And with a disorder such as autism, the patient should never be burdened with such things. They should have the same opportunities as individuals in other racial groups. But it's clear that that's not the case. It's clear that not only is there a lack of treatment, but there's a lack of culturally relevant treatment, meaning that treatment that will actually make it to the patient, treatment that will actually be taken into mind by the patient and will be used by the patient. This meaning there's not a lot of Hispanic or Spanish or in Spanish treatment for kids with autism, but it doesn't, of Hispanic kids with autism, but it doesn't stop there. There's also not people that are taking into culturally minded aspects that relate to what it's like to grow up within the Black experience and relating that to autism and dealing with issues relating to autism. There's just not. There's just a general format, a general criteria, and a few doctors providing treatment. And as someone else in this podcast is going to hint at, a lot of these doctors are not Black or Hispanic. They're oftentimes white. So it makes that issue of understanding the perception, understanding what it's like growing up in these heritages, in these areas, and in these environments, how these things ultimately affect how someone grows up and who they become.
Hello, my name is Rakim Griffin. I currently study psychology on a pre-med track here at Bard College. In my section, I'll be talking about diversity within the healthcare field. Having this conversation is very important because minorities are very underrepresented in almost all healthcare professional fields. And this includes jobs in hospitals, health services, offices of physicians, dentists, chiropractors, optometrists, and even psychologists. Studies show that even 80% of all psychologists identify as white. And within the fields that I just mentioned, Latinos, Blacks, Asians, and women make up less than the majority of the amount of people that are hired within these professional fields. So we begin to think about some of the ways this can be detrimental or have an impact on our patients and on the people who are trying to receive care. Another reason that this conversation is important is related to the fact that 4 out of 5 Americans withhold important information about their health, family history, and past because they feel uncomfortable or disagree with their doctors and are afraid to speak up about this. This is very, very important because this obviously shows that there are some variables which are stopping people from being able to fully obtain the care and proper medical attention that they deserve. It is very important to have diversity within the healthcare fields because this leads to an increase in patient choice and satisfaction. In fact, there are studies that have shown that racial and ethnic patients are more generally satisfied with their care and more likely to report receiving higher quality when they're being treated by a professional of their own racial or ethnic background. In addition to this, according to the Health Professionals for Diversity Coalition, increasing the diversity of the healthcare workforce serves as an effective strategy for addressing racial and ethnic healthcare disparities. In fact, studies have shown that African American, Hispanic, and Native physicians are more likely than white physicians to practice in underserved communities and to treat numbers of minority patients despite differences. This is important because it shows one of the ways in which race can be a way or tool to actually increase the health outcomes of minorities. It's known that African Americans and Hispanic physicians and women are more likely to provide care for people who are considered to be poor or rely on these types of programs. Although these disparities do exist, there have been positive strides towards creating a more diverse workforce. Mentorship programs, pipeline programs, diversity committees, and certain Title VII programs have played a role in increasing the number of minorities within healthcare fields. Within this portion of the podcast, I will have conversations with some guests who aim to be doctors despite being a part of an underrepresented demographic. They will share their narratives and talk a little bit about their personal experiences with science and healthcare.
Can you hear me, Keyshane?
Yes, I can hear you, Rakim.
Okay, so I have to do a podcast where I'll be talking about different types of health disparities within the mental health field. So one of the portions of my podcast, I'm going to be talking about the lack of diversity within the healthcare professional fields, like doctors, PAs, nurses, and other sciences and stuff like that. So I just wanted to hear like some of your opinions around that topic. So before we start, would you mind letting everybody know what your major is, where you're from, what your goals are, and one fun fact about yourself?
Okay. Hi, my name is Keyshane Whitley. I am currently a junior rising senior at Dickinson College, located in Carlisle, PA. I currently reside in New York City, and my goals are, initially I want to become a cardiothoracic surgeon. That requires going to med school. However, after I do graduate undergrad, I want to participate in a post-bac and then eventually go on to med school to achieve that goal of becoming a cardiothoracic surgeon. I currently major in biochemistry, molecular bio, and biology, double major. And a fun fact about me, science related, is that I hate physics.
Oh, me too. Can you tell the podcast how you identify racially?
Yes, I am a African-American male.
Does your identity have any influence on like what you want to be when you get older?
I think so, to some extent.
Okay, how so? Would you mind explaining?
So I think, and you know, it can all be in my head, but I think that especially when I look at medical brochures, the pamphlets from medical schools, or whenever you look up the demographics of these medical schools, even the school I go to, you look at these demographics, you tend to find that there aren't a lot of students who identify similar to me. And that there in itself is kind of a deterring factor to want to pursue, whether it be higher education or even go into these fields, because the question now becomes, am I fitting? Am I capable? Because there are not a lot of people who look like me, who identify similar to me, that have went down this path. So it becomes a little bit on the end of reluctancy, wanting to pursue these fields and go to medical school or whatever it may be.
Yeah. I invited you to the show because I know that you're also pre-med and you're going like towards a direction where you're going to be underrepresented within your field. And that's something I'm going to have to deal with too, that I deal with now. Like usually I'm the only black person in my science classes or some of my psychology courses. And I know you share like similar experiences to that. How do you feel like diversity would help you in terms of your day-to-day getting like healthcare on your own, like going to the doctor's office, or like which ways has it impacted your experiences?
I think it comes down to the connection. I know, especially when as being a young child, going to the doctor's office and seeing someone who looks like you and administering some sort of health can foster this sense of connection. Say you would have an African-American doctor, I would say, and I would be able to connect with this doctor and say, oh, he looks like me. Maybe now I can become a doctor by seeing someone who identifies me, who looks as me, able to do this. Now I am given the determination. Mm-hmm. I have seen someone else do it similar to me.
What do you think are some of the steps that we can take as a society to increase the amount of diversity within healthcare profession?
Well, first and foremost, I think as a society, what society needs to do is rid itself of biases. That's the first thing, because biases take over the mind and people already have these preconceived notions of someone based on whatever characteristics they have in mind, whether it be race, ethnicity, or background. They already have this preconceived notion in their head what this person is like based on what I've already listed. Because of this, they feel the need to not administer any sort of aid, help, resources to these groups of people. So with that, if biases are first thrown out the door, gotten rid of, then we can truly move forward as a society and even on a further level as a country, right? As the country moves forward into diversifying many different fields, right? So after we get rid of these biases, next and foremost thing to do is to start looking at communities, those under-resourced, that can use some aid, use some resource, right? That can use some help. And once these communities are found and assessed, they can be given the necessary resources for their students, for their kids, the children, the people in these communities to further excel so they can dream, so they can believe, so they can achieve whatever goals they may set.
Great. Do you feel like you're going to like inspire other people once you become a surgeon?
100,000%, of course, because the reason why I'm so firm on my belief that I might inspire those is because I was inspired, right? I scoured the web, look here and there for people who have made it, right? And I found some people, and I've connected with them at my school, who are doing great things in the science field among scientific lines, and that inspires me because, you know, it comes down to they done it, they're doing it, so can I. Because most of the time, these people come from backgrounds such as mine, right? And if they can do it, then I too need to persevere and push forward and also do it. So of course, yes, 100%.
Cool. How many Black doctors have you had in your life?
That administered care to me?
Actually, I want to know, like, how many Black doctors you've seen?
How many I've seen personally? I've seen two, and of those two, one of them administered help to me when I was just an adolescent.
Okay, and compared to how many white doctors?
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Yes.
You've seen hundreds of white doctors personally or like on social media?
Not personally, as in they didn't administer me care, but you know, as you go into a hospital, okay. There are a bunch of them everywhere.
Wait, so you've only seen two?
Mm-hmm.
So you've only seen two your whole life?
Two what?
Two Black doctors.
Yeah, not counting nurses. Okay. Nurses are not doctors.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to specify, because usually, like, the more competitive, like, the application cycles or the schooling is, or however long it is, like, those are factors that play into roles into not seeing that representation, because it's more competitive. I don't know why that relationship exists, though. We're more likely to see 10 Black nurses than 10 Black doctors, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, yes. These questions need to be asked, so we appreciate you. And I do have a question for you. My question is, what are your goals and how do you see diversity align with your goals? Are they going to help you achieve your goal even further, or due to the lack of diversity, do you see you not achieving your goal as well as you wanted to? Or basically what I'm trying to get at is, how much weight does diversity hold when you achieve your goals?
I think for me, since I researched this stuff, it's kind of iffy how I feel, because I know that there's already like factors set up against me before I even like step into the path that I want to go, or even know which direction I'm actually going to be in. But I try to work my hardest in school, because I know GPAs matter, relationships, and like your actual learning process is what's going to make you stand out and get you into certain places. I don't know how I will be in terms of like interacting with other people once I get there, like knowing that I'm really alone or will be alone in some regards.
Thank you.
Today's presentation gave an inside look at the relationship between race and the mental health system, and how throughout the years, the systematic racism may have changed form, but it still exists. We explored three main topics. We first looked at the history of the mental health system and how this possibly feeds into the stigma that is felt within some of the racial communities. Next, we looked at some current flaws in the system when it comes to diagnosis and treatment, and how diagnosis, when it is fallible, ultimately can have effects on treatment. Treatment that may not be what the patient needs, and ultimately may cause more issues. Finally, we looked at treatment availability as well as practitioners that are racially diverse. What we found is that the treatment is not always available for members of outgroups, as well as the lack of representation is clear and present, and that many of the doctors that are practitioners with the system either are not racially diverse or are not necessarily culturally aware of the experiences that their patients are going through. The hope of today's presentation is not only to just give the inside look, but to prompt you to think about how the changes in the mental health system going forward may take these ideas into mind, for I hope for a system that is more inclusive of all, and not only inclusive for all, but equitable for all. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate you joining us for our podcast and hearing our discussion, and we hope that some of the things that we discussed today prompt you to think for a new day tomorrow.